Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, welcome in everybody, live from the Jackson Orthopedic Institute studios here at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today. 0-5 for the Jags, Jeff, but yesterday Tony and I asked folks out there to give us their adjectives to describe the way they feel about the team right now. Give us three adjectives. And despite the obvious disappointed, a lot of that stuff, there's a lot of encouraging stuff out there. And I think this game, albeit still a loss, and it's big boy football. There are no moral victories in the NFL. If you're looking for signs that they're getting a little bit closer, did you find some of those signs this week?
Well, the real key to this football team is the performance of the defense. We know that the offense is going to have major ups and downs just because of how young they are on that side of the ball. But for the defense to take the step up that they did was very encouraging to me. Now, it wasn't perfect. You know, you would like to have seen at some point in that ball game a big play to crop up to where they gave their offense the ball at either point blank range, or taking it in and scored themselves. You know, because that's the kind of plays that I think you're going to need at times with such a young offense. Now, they didn't get that. They didn't get the stop kind of at the end of the game to give their offense one more chance on a one possession game. But, you know, watching the film yesterday was so encouraging because the coverage was so much better. You know, when I'm watching the film, I make notes, and here's my notepad because, you know, I have to do, whether it be Film Room Friday, Jaguars All Access, the coaches show, and I make notes, and I'm showing them to you right now.
Yeah.
Just a single page, and these are kind of highlights that I always say that are maybe worthy of showing at some point. And some of them are good, and some of them are bad, but on the defensive side of the ball, I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I had 7 plays picked out of showing how good the coverage was and that guys were just, I mean, I'm talking within an arm's reach on a play. And those resulted, I think there were 3 coverage sacks in that ball game. You know, the pass rush was okay. It wasn't great, but the coverage allowed them to get the sacks that they did. And to me, that's been the biggest deficit or the biggest deficiency that defense has had in the first 4 weeks. And that was a huge step up against a good football team. I mean, Antonio Brown didn't even have the 5th catch until the game was over, and it was such a garbage call by Mike Tomlin. I pointed that out last night on Jaguars All Access because the Pittsburgh Steelers had the ball with 2 minutes to go, and the Jaguars had no timeouts. Antonio Brown, and I know you had him in fantasy,
I agree with you. It was a garbage call. Trust me.
And to know that you take a knee and the game is over, and then to put that at risk – so that one individual can have his 5th catch for over 50 yards to keep a streak alive, to me, was embarrassing. I think that Chuck Noll and the Rooney family probably did not like that. I don't know if that was Mike Tomlin's call, was that Todd Haley's call. But to me, at what point did the Pittsburgh Steelers start putting individual accomplishments over team objectives?
Tony made the point after the game as well. How do you even know that point what his stats are, right?
I mean,
point, we're watching it, and we're watching the stats roll as they go, and they had targeted him 11 times in the game, and they had only completed 4 passes.
Which is another great example of the job that the Jaguars did defensively, because, I mean, that guy is a phenomenal player.
He really is.
Phenomenal player.
And I'm with you. I thought, we certainly saw McCray break up the one at the goal line that could have been a touchdown. They made it tough. Nothing really came easy for him in that game except for that last play. And maybe they felt like, hey, I guess there's really little risk because they'd never believe we're going to do that in this situation. But all it takes, I don't know who it was. Maybe it was Andre Branch. Whoever was coming off the end got their hand up.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm thinking is, If you're able to jump and tip that ball up in the air and that ball gets intercepted, you could lose the game, or at least go into overtime. You put your team in jeopardy from taking a W. It was pretty amazing that that would take place and that they would even have kind of the wherewithal to follow that, and that would be that big of a deal to them. It's a nice accomplishment for a guy to get, and there's nothing wrong with the streak. And
it is, but what does it mean when it comes at that juncture?
Exactly.
You know, that to me that was just ridiculous. And then the other thing that I did not like that I pointed out last night was Troy Polamalu, when the Jaguars are going to clock the ball, him trying to leap over the offensive linemen to impact the clock play in some fashion. Look, and I understand that Troy Polamalu has done that before and has had success at it, but the NFL a few years ago made it illegal for guys that aren't at the line of scrimmage to jump over and try to block a field goal. And they did that because of safety. Safety of the players. Why do you allow Troy Polamalu to do that very thing? He did it 2 weeks in a row. He did it against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he was offsides on that play as well.
But who do you fault? You fault him?
No.
You fault the rule?
Yeah. No,
right.
No, no,
oh,
no,
okay.
No, no, no. I don't fault the rules. I fault the rules, and the league needs to address that. But I also fault the coaching of the Pittsburgh Steelers to allow that to happen. Because, to me, if you put a player at risk, go all the way back. And you remember a guy by the name of Mike Utley?
Sure.
You remember how he ended up having a broken neck?
I don't remember the specifics.
Player jumping up and landing on top of his head.
Okay.
Okay? In a wheelchair for the rest of his life, and he ended up passing away. You know, so why are we having those kind of plays happen in the National Football League when they're so concerned about risk? I don't get it.
Well, to me, in that circumstance, I heard you on the call of the game as it was happening, and you said, and I don't want to misquote you, so as I recall it, you said something to the effect of, he's obviously going to clock the ball in this situation. Just a week or so ago, we saw Blake Bortles do the fake spike, mm-hmm. right? I don't think, if you're Pittsburgh, it's on you to assume that anything is going to happen
Absolutely.
On the other side of the football.
But you should not be allowed to do that. To be a guy jumping from the top rope over top of the heads of offensive linemen.
Okay, but you are allowed, according to the rules, right? And also, I'm trying to play devil's advocate mm-hmm. here with you. You're also allowed to cut block, not chop block, not engage a guy low when
he's
been
engaged. But the cut block rules
high.
Were tweaked. They were tweaked this past year about where it can happen and how it can happen. And those were changed to make sure that defensive linemen were safer.
Okay, before they were changed,
mm-hmm.
those plays resulted in a lot of guys getting hurt, right? Should teams have self-policed themselves from doing that because they were afraid of hurting their opponents when they were allowed under the rules and they were effective plays in the National Football League?
No, I don't have a problem with them doing it at that time, and I'm not criticizing Troy Polamalu because it's within the rules, but to me, that's crazy. If he wants to go 100 miles an hour, you know, and fine, go 100 miles an hour, but don't be committing a penalty and risking injury of other players. Because to me, you committed a penalty and now you're putting people at risk. Okay, so the actual act of committing a penalty and putting players at risk to me makes that.
But the penalty aspect, I mean, guys miss time. Their rush all the time, whether they're leaping over the line or not. Mm-hmm. That's one of those that if he weren't leaping over the line, I don't think the fact that he committed the penalty is just a poorly, you know, he tried to time it up and
sure.
catch it at the exact moment. Now, he's probably made a bunch of plays doing exactly that throughout the course of his career.
Maybe one.
Well, maybe one?
Yeah. On a clock situation.
I'm not talking about jumping over the line. I'm talking about timing blitzes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, running up to. That's what I'm talking about. You guys jump off sides
but
all the time.
Jumping over is the part that I have a problem
right,
with.
Right.
Not trying to time it up or to get through the line of scrimmage or going 100 miles an hour on a clock play. I have no problem with that. I mean, hell, I was on the first play that ever happened when Dan Marino did the old fake clock.
Right.
And I wasn't going 100 miles an hour and I regret it. But, I mean, the act of jumping over, and in my mind, Zane Beatles and Luke Bowanko and every offensive lineman should have turned around and did the suplex on him and dropped elbows on him like a wrestling move.
Now, why hasn't the NFL, do you think it's something the NFL is going to have to take a look at or
I think they
take
should.
A look at?
I mean, if he flies over and is offsides and injured the quarterback, then how do you look at it?
Well, certainly. I understand what you're saying, but to me, There are guys that are going to play within the boundaries of what's allowable, and that's allowable. Clotheslines used to be allowable
that's
in
why,
the NFL.
That's why my main criticism is that the league needs to look at that.
All right, that one I can get on board with you. regardless. I don't want to get too hung up on that specific because we got a lot about the Jags to get into, including, as you said, much better play that you saw in the secondary. We want to talk about the running back position. We want to talk about the play of the offensive line and obviously the first home start for Blake Bortles and a lot more. We'll take your calls today as well with the professor, Jeff Logman here. You can follow him on Twitter now at Logs56, L-O-G-S-56. He's quickly gone up over 2,000, Tony, in just the blink of an eye. And, that will grow as Jaguar Nation comes to realize Logman's out there tweeting not only about the beautiful game of football, and telling you that
I gave people a phenomenal fishing tip on Sunday morning
about the tarpon.
Absolutely,
I read you, brother. Mm-hmm. I know. Okay, they were they were crushing some schools of mullet.
That's correct.
Thank you very much. Told you, I didn't even peek.
I gave them specifics. So if you're a fisherman, you might want to check it out.
I would check that out. He told you where to go to take advantage of that situation. So you can take advantage of tweeting us by tweeting at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Lauren. Today, the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships asks you, it's a positivity kind of question, which player's play on the Jaguars has surprised you, has been the most positive surprise this year? Of anybody on either side of the football, you can weigh in on that, and you can do that on the Facebook page as well, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. 641-1010 is the number. We'll get into the running game, the secondary, and a lot more coming up. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
How can you argue the fact that Storm and the little plays that he had showed up and did some good things? It's not surprising to me. I think I mentioned that 2 weeks ago he had a good week of practice. Last week he had a good week, and it's that trust, and he's building trust. For him to go in there and perform and really capture his opportunity, I thought it was pretty cool to see.
There you go. Gus Bradley yesterday talking about Storm Johnson. I'm told no music theme today.
That is the theme. It's Storm Johnson.
Storm Johnson. Is that the theme, Warren?
It's pretty
Storm
obvious.
Is rain the theme today?
Absolutely. Sure.
One of the all-time great songs here by the Doors.
It's a good song. Yeah. There's no question about
it. It's a weather
that.
Theme.
It's a whatever I feel like theme.
Hashtag weather.
Logman's just got the corners of his mouth turned up. He got a little grin on his face.
I like it.
A lot of good memories of that song.
I was wondering if you could share it with us or not.
I wonder if I can find some other ones that make his mouth do that.
Later on. I don't know. Lauren's going to leave us in an
hour. I know,
hour.
I'm sorry.
She's got to do show prep for Helmets and Heels
tonight. I have to go talk to some guy named Josh Scobie.
Yeah, the show will be, you know, in an hour from now, the show will be 9 hours away, so you got to get ready.
I just have to talk to him. I don't have to get ready.
You don't? Okay.
Just have to talk to him.
Well, have a good show tonight. We'll miss you.
Thank you. I'll miss you. I'll be listening. I'm not abandoning you.
You're not? Oh, so you're going to stick around?
No, not exactly.
Oh, all right.
I'm just going to keep playing the song and shut up now.
Pretty obvious right now. Logman's still grinning over there, but probably not at me. All right, let's get it. Storm Johnson, let's start there. Gus Bradley talked about his impact. Very few carries, Jeff, but he looked like a different guy out there compared to what we have seen. I don't want to make too much out of a small sample, but what were your impressions of watching the tape?
I think the same impression that everybody else had in that the limited reps that you saw him, which, you know, he had four carries for 27 yards in a ball game, but he also had one that was called back because of penalty. You know, the average is over 6 yards a carry. I mean, Toby Gerhart's still around 2.6. What are your eyes telling you?
That he looked more decisive, quicker.
Yep.
Ran north-south once he made his cut.
Yep. Down the backside, too, on a couple of those runs.
Cut, I mean, we can't run a stretch play. This guy's cutting it back across the entire line of scrimmage on a couple of those.
Yep. He's a very good. He has better vision and more decisive, I think, than Toby Gerhart. And at one point in the ball game, Toby had a play that he kind of ran up the back of Zane Beatles.
Yep.
And had a great opportunity if he just shuffled a little bit to his right, when the defensive lineman peeked back to the inside for him to jump out to the right and hit it and go and make a significant gain, which it ended up being like a 3.5-4 yard gain, but it could have been a 15-yard gain. And those are the kind of things I think that they're excited to maybe see more of. And look, I'm not saying that Storm Johnson is the answer, and I don't think that Gus Bradley or they think that maybe Storm Johnson is the answer, but they think that maybe there's a better possibility of him having more production than what they've been getting so far from Toby Gerhart. Toby Gerhart, when he was in Minnesota, was a backup and a third down back. So why not let him go back to the role that he handled mostly? Because if you remember on that one drive that Storm Johnson had, the real nice run, Storm kind of comes off the field a little bit limping, you know, because he's coming back from that high ankle sprain or
right.
the ankle sprain, whatever it was, high or low, I don't know. And then Toby comes in and catches that little screen pass and gets right up the back of Luke Bowanko, makes a really nice play, and you're like, wow, this is nice. Well, go to that. Make more of that happen.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said in the post game, that that was his role in Minnesota. You know he can excel in that role. He's done it before. And who cares what he's getting paid? I mean, I don't. That's one
thing.
Matter. I tell fans not to get caught up in that unless it's impacting your salary cap in your ability to sign other players. And clearly, it's not on this team with their cap situation. Who cares what they went out and paid him? Oh, he got overpaid. Doesn't matter if he can find a role where he can help
you
win.
That's what you do in free agency. Period.
And overpay,
and
sure,
absolutely. And it's not like he is a top 50% payroll back. I mean, he's probably around 17th or 18th in the National Football League as far as backs. But
right.
but how many of the backs that are above or below him got to actual free agency? You know what I mean? So, I mean, you have to consider that. But you don't even think about that if you're a coach. I mean, you don't sit there and look at the salary cap numbers in your sheet
not.
Of paper
well,
and
you,
go,
you
okay, who are we going to play?
You know, I'm not trying to get off track here, but you don't think there's ever any of that, like, early on in – I'm not saying at this point you've seen it. Toby's don't some guys get the benefit of the doubt because of what the organization invests in a guy?
No, I don't think it's because of the pay so much as that I think it is the belief that they have in them, which the pay sometimes is a big
reflection.
The pay
is reflective of what they think, and
absolutely.
They're trying to see them replicate what they think that they've signed.
That's right.
In terms of the talent. Storm Johnson, I don't care where you drafted the guy, plenty of running backs. Undrafted guys, late round picks, that is the position that seems like you can find more guys that can flourish. And a lot of it has to do with the fit with the system.
And I think you're right that you can find guys like that more through the entire draft process, maybe than any other position. Look at San Diego Chargers, 2 weeks ago?
Brandon.
And when the running back, formerly Donald Brown of the Indianapolis Colts, gets hurt in that ball game, and also he got rested, spelled. All of a sudden, the backup, this rookie, comes in.
Right.
Nobody knows who he is.
Right.
And he looks more explosive than Donald Brown. Then this past week, Donald Brown got hurt, and that rookie running back, because they've had major injuries at running back, has to assume the role. He has a better game than Donald Brown.
He went for like 180
had.
Yards.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I mean, he was, he was.
And was he like a fifth or sixth round pick running back? You know, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that he was a fourth,
actually,
fifth, or sixth round
pick. Was he that high even? Because they drafted Marion Grice this year, and they cut him because Oliver outplayed him in camp. I wouldn't be shocked if Oliver was an undrafted guy.
I'll
I don't have it
in
up
minute.
In front of me.
I still got the info on my laptop.
Regardless, the point being that Storm Johnson doesn't matter what round draft pick you got him in, if he can come in here and play. When you look at his game, when you look at his strengths and his weaknesses, have you seen enough of him to really have a good feel for that as to what areas, what kind of plays, and what kind of workload? I don't know we know anything about the workload yet because he's had such a few reps in the National Football League.
Well, I mean, you don't know until you actually put him in there, but the sample size that you've seen so far in the regular season has been pretty strong. Now, what you saw in the preseason wasn't overly encouraging, but how many rookies come in and just light up the preseason besides Allen Hurns? I mean, it doesn't happen very often. There's typically an adjustment period. But from what I've seen so far, why not play the guy? And by the way, Brandon Oliver was a free agent out of Buffalo.
There you go.
5'8", 208.
If you can play, you can play.
If you can play, you can play. It doesn't matter where you were picked at. And sometimes it takes more time to be able to win coaches over and general managers over because of that status. But that's because they have a belief in somebody else. And that's okay. I mean, it takes time to get that. Now, and I'm not saying that the Jaguars don't have a belief in Storm Johnson. It's just that when he was in the preseason, I don't think he was overly wowing anybody. And then he had an ankle injury. So he's been on the shelf for a while. Well, now all of a sudden he's starting to work back in to the lineup. The reps that he had, it looked encouraging. Your reps that you've had elsewhere have not. It's time to get a longer look.
I understand why the first four games of the season, when you're getting beat pretty sizably, that you kind of go away from the running game because for A, it's not working, but B, you got to get a lot more points in a shorter period of time. Here's a game, though, where you're within a score the entire way. Okay, it's a 1-point game with 12 minutes left. The Jags throw it 36 times, and cutting out Blake Bortles' scrambles, they ran it 11 times in this game. So more than 3-to-1 pass-to-run ratio. Are they smart to say, you know what, if it's not working, we're not going to pound our head into the wall, or do they need to be a little bit more patient and try to see if they can get something going on the ground?
Well, you'd like to be able to be a little bit more patient if it's working and if you can do it. And so far this year, they hadn't been able to do it because of score differential, and it hasn't been working particularly well. But, you know, the biggest reason I think that you have to start maybe committing a little more to it is because the offensive line is playing much, much better. I thought Austin Pasdor in his first game back showed the relentless player that he is. He's not an overly talented player, but he's a guy that probably finishes blocks better than anybody on the offensive line. And I like him. I mean, I like him because he has power. He's relentless. He's aware. Never has a mental error. I mean, he's a good, solid football player. And the first game back for him, very encouraging. Luke Bowanko is getting better. Brandon Linder, to me, is still playing at a high level. Zane Beatles has gotten better in the last 2 weeks. Luke Jokel took a big step up this past week. Now, was the level of competition like what it was in previous weeks? Probably not. So you would expect to see an elevation in his play. But the offensive line overall against the Pittsburgh Steelers that can bring a lot of intricate blitzes by Dick LeBeau, I think did a fantastic job. Fantastic job. There were many instances in that game that Blake Bortles had more time probably than he thought. And I'm not saying that he was skittish in the pocket, but maybe he felt that clock kind of ticking and knew that the blitz was coming and felt like he had to go ahead and get it out and probably could have stuck in there just a little bit longer and allowed things to develop. But that's all part of the learning process. That's part of a young quarterback learning to trust his offensive line, and it's only been in there for a couple weeks. So I think that will come. And I think that the confidence and the trust in the coaches with that offensive line will come when they have some more production out of the running back position.
All right, so some positives from Storm Johnson, some certainly positives from the offensive line, and we saw folks such as Pro Football Focus grade every offensive lineman with a positive grade this week for the first time all year. We'll get to some of the things that didn't go right on offense, and certainly when you're only scoring 3 field goals, there are things that didn't go right. We'll do that coming up. Jeff Loggeman's here. Fat Tony's here. I'm Mike Dempsey. This is Jaguars Today. Stick around. Your call's welcome at 641-1010, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You know, no one works harder than Alan Hearns and wants it more than him. It's unfortunate. Sometimes those things, you know, they happen. I want to make sure he doesn't press. That's what I talked to him after a couple of them brought him over the sideline and said, hey, that's in the past now. Don't worry about that. Let's move forward from it.
Ah, very clever. Lauren Brooks, you're very clever. Allentown. That's
I don't need no music theme.
We don't need no stinking music theme. We're just going to go with whoever player. We're talking about there. Gus Bradley yesterday talking about Alan Hearns. Rough for him, Jeff, with the 3 drops in this football game. Don't understand why he went after the one pass one-handed. You know, what do you make of he, obviously, undrafted guy, so you don't expect him to come in here and be Julio Jones right off the jump, but he's still been the most productive Jaguar wide receiver, but certainly has had his ups and downs, isn't it?
Well, let's make sure that we state one thing. He'll never be a Julio Jones, you know, just because he doesn't have that speed. You know, he's a 4-5-ish guy, which is fast enough and quick enough to play the game for a long time and be a very effective player. The thing that kind of concerns me is that, you know, when you watch Alan Hearns at the University of Miami, he never had an issue with drops. I mean, that was not the type of player that he was. He was a perimeter player, had a phenomenal senior year. Watching his tape, you're sitting there going, well, kind of surprising that he was an undrafted guy. Some teams had him, you know, with a fifth-round grade, whatever. But, you know, I wonder if that one first drop that he had made him start to think a little bit too much instead of just playing the game. Because you remember he had the double move and he was wide open. Was it Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he had a touchdown if he catches that ball clean because they had the double move with the cornerback.
D'Angelo
from Virginia
Hall.
Tech, D'Angelo Hall. And so Did that drop lead to the near drop in San Diego that led to the three drops here? And that might be the case, but against the Pittsburgh Steelers, the reason he had drops was mechanical issues. I don't know if you watch the drops that he had to where the ball's out in front and he's got his hands turned to like have a basket catch. Okay. So in other words, both palms are open.
Right.
And the elbows are down. His hands should have been turned to where he's catching the point of the ball with his fingers up and his thumbs almost touching to where you create that triangle. And then the one-handed one is just, that's a mechanical thing. What are you doing?
Right.
Why are you trying to catch it with one hand? And that's something that is correctable, but you also have to be able to correct the mental aspect of that, I think, for a wide receiver, and that Gus is right. You don't want these drops to lead to more drops, to lead to lacking confidence and then poor performance. So that's kind of a delicate line that you gotta work, in that if you start to overcoach, then all of a sudden you get a player that may be trying to think too much. So
it's not only the youth on this football team, but whether the young guys or not, you're missing Mercedes Lewis, you're missing Cecil Shorts, you're missing Marquise Lee. So you're missing three guys you expected to be a big part of your pass.
Well, and I wouldn't put Marquise Lee in that category just because, I mean, he's an unproven guy.
But in the sense that you took him ahead of Allen Robinson. You certainly took him ahead of Allen Hurns.
I would have taken Allen Robinson ahead of Marquise. I would have taken him absolutely ahead of
Marquise. But that's what they did. Look, whether he's unproven, but he's no more unproven than Allen Robinson is, mm-hmm, and Allen Hurns is. Now, I know Allen Hurns has played, you know, in these five games, but I mean, going into this year, you would expect Marquise Lee to be as big a part, you would think, of the offense as those guys. My point being, they're deficient with their weapons right now. Fred Taylor walked in here after the game, for the post game, the first thing he said before we went on the air is, nobody's open. You know, because he's watching it from the same perspective. You've got that look-down perspective. And you talked about Blake maybe not being gun-shy in the pocket, but maybe thinking, I got to get rid of the ball a little bit earlier. Is that a product of, I'm waiting for separation that's not coming? I mean, what can be done here to find more openings for some of these receivers, or are they limited by, you know, what they're putting out there right now?
Well, I think they're limited just because of the experience that these young guys have. I think a couple things will happen. Eventually, the players will start to understand the concept of why they're doing something. And then, because, you know, when you coach a wide receiver, a lot of times they're almost in a robotic mode in that first year. You know, okay, five steps here, and then I have to plant and then come back. Well, on paper, that all is fine and dandy, but when you get into the game, well, maybe all of a sudden the defensive back is on the opposite shoulder, and so my route might have to be adjusted a little bit. So a player has to be able to kind of think on the fly and adjust on the fly, and a lot of times that doesn't happen in the first year. That's why you see so many wide receivers that come into the National Football League that are highly touted, you know, highly, highly coveted, and come in and they have mediocre first years.
Right.
And then they start to, you know, explode. And the reason for that is just game experience and the adjustment period that it takes for a wide receiver to learn to adapt to different coverages, to understand the offensive philosophy and to understand the concept. So for what these guys have been doing so far, I'm very encouraged by what they've been able to do so far. I mean, has there been a wide receiver that's come into the National Football League as first-round picks, and you look at all of them in the past, and come in and be immediate, impactful players? I mean, the only guy that really comes to my mind, or there's two, Randy Moss, Anquan Boldin. I mean, can you think of anybody else?
I think both Green and Julio were pretty good.
They were pretty good.
Coming in.
So we're talking four
guys. No, I know, but I'm not. Yeah,
but they had a specific skill set. I mean, they weren't so much route runners as they were. They could run down the field and make a play.
They're 6 foot five guys that can run past you and catch the ball and make the play over the you.
Except for Anquan Boldin.
Right.
Anquan Boldin was a very special guy.
He's a physical, right.
Most of the guys that come in that have an impact are guys that have tremendous vertical speed and size. Anquan Boldin was very special, and a lot of people, I think, don't appreciate him for what he was able to do to come in. Because, I mean, Anquan Boldin's like a 4-5 guy. I mean, he's an Allen Hurns-type speed guy, but he was able to have tremendous success his rookie year. It takes time. It takes time. First of all, things have to happen. One, the rookie wide receiver has to learn to adjust on the fly. He has to understand what exact his responsibility is based on certain coverages. He has to be comfortable with adjusting with coverages on the play while it's happening. He has to have a bond with the quarterback, a repertoire with the quarterback, however you want to call it. And then the offensive coordinator has to be able to have a comfort level in calling certain plays with these young wide receivers, and the quarterback has to have a comfort level with the plays. I mean, so there's so many different dynamics that Phillip Rivers already has, that Peyton Manning already has, and that veteran wide receivers already have. But all of these things that take time to develop, the Jaguars have like five guys that are trying to all figure it out at once. You know, so I mean, I don't get disappointed in anything that the offense does. In fact, you know, when you look at individual things, you get very encouraged just because of how young they are and how inexperienced they are. I'm excited about the offense.
Interesting.
I am too. And for me, it's about, you talk about the small windows we were just talking about. I'm encouraged as much as anything by Blake Bortles being willing to throw it despite the size of the windows that he has right now, and thinking about here over the course of the next 11 games and into the future in his career, when guys are really open, how comfortable he's going to feel throwing the ball to these guys when he has real windows to throw into.
Well, his windows are going to get better, but the windows don't get real big in the National Football League,
right.
And the quarterback has to understand that. And he has to throw guys open at times, and that's a term that really in college you don't even know what it is. I mean, if you go to a college quarterback right now and say, okay, can you throw him open? He's going to look at you all cross-eyed and go, what does throw a guy open mean? Because I throw to the open guys, right? I mean, most young guys would say that.
Right.
So you have
there's always one or two guys open in college.
That's right.
Right.
So at the pro level, you're throwing them open. But, you know, the things that are very encouraging about Blake Bortles is that he has a unique ability to weigh risk and reward before he makes a throw. For example, the long interception that he had, Allen Robinson was covered up. But it's a one-on-one situation, and you've got to be able to make that throw at times because you know that the reward is, one, a big, long completion, two, maybe a flag on Allen, you know, that's committed against Allen Robinson, and the risk is it's intercepted. But it's a long throw, and I'll take the chance because the reward is much greater than the risk of an interception at 40-something yards. Well, the ball got intercepted, and it ended up being essentially a 46-yard net punt.
Right.
Most young quarterbacks can't process that risk-reward before they make a throw. He has that ability, which is pretty special.
Do they need, or is it too soon to know, with the potential from what you've seen, we haven't seen much of Marquise Lee yet. When you look at these guys and their physical attributes that they have, is there that true NFL number one type wide receiver that teams will have to game plan for, that they'll line up eventually and say, we've got to stop Allen Robinson, we've got to stop Marquise Lee, we've got to take this guy out? Or are they missing still eventually one more piece to that receiving puzzle?
I mean, it's too early to tell. I mean, I think Marquise Lee really is – He's going to take some time to develop, but he has a skill set that would say he has a chance to be a legitimate number one. But is the maturity, the understanding of the game, the consistency? I mean, all those things have to work for a player to be a number one. But he has a skill set that tells you that he could be that guy. I think Allen Robinson has probably not the skill set of a Marquise Lee. But he shows more maturity. He shows more understanding. His consistency is a little bit better. You know, so does he have a chance? Yeah, he's got a chance. But it's not very often. How many teams in the National Football League do where you look at their team and you go, oh, yeah, they got a number one?
Maybe half.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe. And
something
the rest of them are trying to find them.
Right. But for the teams that have them, certainly – opens up a lot of stuff for you.
Opens up a lot of stuff, but how many of those number one wide receivers have a true franchise quarterback?
Not many, probably. There's a mix. When you start to talk about it, I mean, really, Phillip Rivers doesn't have a number one.
Nope.
But he's got Antonio Gates, you know, who's been one of the greatest at his position.
But you wouldn't consider him a number one.
No, well, you would not in the receiver sense, right. But I mean, certainly 65 touchdowns.
As a tight end? bar none, franchise
right,
guy.
Exactly. Usually, you're talking about a guy who can do it all, and they included in that is stretch a field.
That's right.
Which forces them to maybe commit a safety over the top to that guy, which then you get to start playing around as an offensive coordinator.
You don't have to have a number one to win Super Bowls. You can have a lot of good number twos and win a Super Bowl. But the key to all of that is you pretty much, chances are, and if you look at the percentages, you need to have a franchise
guy.
You
better guy have the QB, right?
If you're going to be winning Super
Bowl.
Yeah,
once every 10 years or so, it happens that you don't need one. That's about it.
That's right.
Really, when it's all said and done. That's not very good odds when you're one of 32 teams.
I'll take a franchise quarterback over a number one wide receiver all day long.
Oh, I agree with you. But you look at a guy like Peyton Manning, and Demaryius Thomas is that guy. You know, no matter who's playing quarterback, he is that kind of alpha threat at the wide receiver position.
By the way, you know, we do our fantasy picks before the game.
Yeah.
You know, and I was texting one of my go-to guys to get some info, Tony Khan. And I said, all right, Tony, man, you're the statistics guy. Give me some stuff. I got it like 5 minutes or 5-10 minutes after we made our picks. And at the top of the list, he said, Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah.
But well, I got it too late.
And the feeling was that Peyton's the kind of guy that is going to get one of his guys off. You know what I mean? That Demaryius Thomas had a slow first 3 weeks of the season. They had the bye week, and people were asking what's wrong with Demaryius Thomas. Peyton seems to, I mean, he's that good that he seems to have the ability to say, we're going to feature this guy this week, or we like that matchup enough this week. But
my guess
42
is,
points later, he came through.
My guess is that this week I'll probably be picking last again.
You
don't think so?
You mean first?
Yeah.
I don't know. You did okay. Matt Forte did good work for you.
Well, I stole him off of your sheet.
It's all right. I picked Gio Bernard before him. I picked the wrong guy off my own sheet.
Yeah,
so.
When you picked Gio, I was like, oh, yeah. That's perfect. Because I didn't want Gio.
Set you up. All right. We will come back. We'll take a look at this Dayton football history, the Honda drive around the NFL. We got to get to the defensive side of the football with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Touched on it briefly earlier. What went on with the secondary this week? Where were the improvements made? The pass rush, certainly showing up with the sacks, but how good was it overall? And how do they hold the Pittsburgh Steelers to 10 points? And is it a sign of things to come going forward? 641-1010 if you want to get in. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Jaguars today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, pretty big milestone as Sweetness got the job done in 1984, passing Jim Brown to become the NFL's all-time leading rusher at the time with 12,312 yards. Peyton finished the game with 154 yards on the ground, which was his record-setting 59th career 100-yard game at the time. That was October 7th, 1984. Birthdays on this date. How about Jeff Loggeman's former teammate, Lashay Mastin? Back in 95.
Fullback.
How many career rushing yards for Lashay Mastin would you guess?
He's not over 1,000.
Tony, what do you guess? Jeff is correct.
He's not over 1,000. I will go with 225.
That's pretty damn good. Lashay Mastin officially has exactly 218 more yards than I do. Absolutely played about 5 years in the National Football League, and he had
a
birthday
a hard
today.
Now.
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, and, Johnny Morton, birthday today as well, turns 43. He was here helping coach receivers.
That's right. He was had one of the internships here to be a coach with the Jaguars throughout training camp.
Did you get a chance to spend any time?
I did.
Does he look like he's got the makings of a good future coach or what?
Yeah, he did a really good job of working with the players, and you can tell him he's still in great shape.
He really, right. Didn't he looked like a player.
I mean, he still looks like he could play. But, you know, with Johnny, a lot of times, you know, if Jerry Sullivan's trying to communicate sometimes how to do certain things, you know, as a coach, sometimes you'd like to be able to show it. And Johnny Morton was showing him.
Gotcha.
He would say, this is what you want. He'd have his wide receiver gloves on and everything and would do some of the drills with the players to try to show them exactly what Jerry was talking about. He jumped in with his entire body and really was committed to it, and it impressed the heck out of me.
He did some mixed martial arts, didn't he? Wasn't he like
did
ultimate fighting, something like that for a little spell?
Not quite sure, but I knew he was into a lot of the mixed martial arts stuff. I think as a player, as
right.
part of his training regime.
Well, whatever he's doing, it's working. And then one of my favorite guys, the first player that I can recall who openly embraced fantasy football. The Priest. Priest Holmes.
Oh, yeah.
Had a national commercial. Priest Holmes became a phenomena because of fantasy football. And there you go. Priest Holmes turned 41 years young today. Former Kansas City Chief and, of course, Baltimore Raven. Played against Priest Holmes. Give us a scouting report when you were getting ready for that guy.
Excellent player, explosive, had home run ability. But probably the impressive thing about him was that he was consistent. You know, I mean, it didn't matter whether it was week one, week 16, playoff game. The guy came to play every week. And I think those are the guys I think that you, through your career, you give them more respect, the guys that are consistent week in and week out, whether it's a contract year or not a contract year. But he was a fantastic player behind also a really good offensive line. The Kansas City Chiefs in that era had one heck of an offensive line.
I mean, they were crushing people back in the day. I want to say another undrafted free agent, if I'm not mistaken.
He was either undrafted or a real late round pick.
Undrafted, 1997, came out and played for 10, 11 years in the National Football League. Three-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro, mm-hmm. which is an even more prestigious honor.
What was his receiving numbers?
Oh, boy, let me see. I've got his wiki page up. I don't know if I've got his numbers on here, but he was one of the most prolific receivers. He holds Chiefs franchise records for most career rushing yards, rushing TDs, and total touchdowns, and the most games with two or more touchdowns in a season, tied with LaDainian Tomlinson for 10. I'll dig the numbers up, but he was definitely big-time pass catcher. He was a 2,000-yard total yardage guy for sure.
Yeah, he was along the lines of Marshall Faulk. You know, to where not only was he a guy that was on first and second down, could hammer you, but also on third down, he could absolutely hammer you as well out of the backfield.
Texas Longhorn, by the way, is what Priest Holmes was back in the day. 5'9", 213, and as soon as my computer page will scroll down, I'll tell you what those receiving numbers were. But I'll tell you this, this Dayton football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality fence for you at a competitive price while still providing unsurpassed customer service. You can get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net. For the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville, had high watermark 74 catches for 690 yards, caught 339 passes for nearly 3,000 yards in his career, and ran for over 8,100 yards. Led the league in rushing 1 year with 1,555, followed up with 1,615. And he's one of these guys, Jeff, that in that era with all these backs in the AFC that kept Fred Taylor out of the Pro Bowl, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it always seemed every year there were three other guys having big seasons, and maybe the market size played against Fred as well. Definitely one of those guys who got the job done for us fantasy owners. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, the Tennessee Titans will be playing this Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars and the rest of the season without safety Bernard Pollard. Pollard ruptured his right Achilles. He will be out for the rest of the 2014 season. The Seattle Seahawks closed out week 5 of the regular season with a 27-17 win last night over Washington. Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson ran for 122 yards and a touchdown. That's the most rushing yards for a quarterback in the history of Monday Night Football. Wilson was also 18 of 24, passing for another 201 yards and two touchdowns through the air as well in that Seahawks win. The Miami Dolphins have suspended defensive end Derek Shelby indefinitely after he was arrested this weekend in a nightclub for, quote, conduct detrimental to the team. According to the police report, Shelby was touching women without their permission late Friday, early Saturday at the club. Security repeatedly asked him to stop when police arrived on scene and tried to place him into custody. Shelby pushed an officer away, took an aggressive stance. Shelby was tasered 3 times before he was finally subdued and arrested.
Did you see his face?
Yeah.
Oh. Because I thought they said resisting arrest without violence. I didn't hear that he shoved the officer.
He shoved the officer, and then apparently he took a fighting stance with the cops that were there. So they took him down.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. My gang's got more members than yours does.
Yeah, the photo is his bottom lip's all swolled up and bloody.
His eyes.
He's got a shiner there on the cheek. He He got beat up pretty good.
Yeah, he did. So, hey, you know what? Don't touch women inappropriately. Hey,
just a note, you talked about the ruptured Achilles tendon of Bernard Pollard.
How big a deal is that?
I mean, he's a tough player. He is a fairly smart player, although he did at times make some commit some penalties that were just stupid. A liability a little bit in coverage, but a leader for that football team. And so yesterday I'm watching the Cleveland Browns game on film, the Titans of Cleveland Browns last week. And Bernard Pollard played the entire game. And I don't know at what point he actually ruptured that Achilles tendon, but he finished the game. He finished the game. So I'm watching.
I don't know how you can walk with a ruptured Achilles.
I don't think it was a complete rupture.
Okay.
I think it was a partial rupture. So I'm watching and I keep watching it, keep looking to see at what point he came out of that game. He finished the game. That's crazy.
That is pretty crazy.
I always knew he was tough, but that is insane.
He, Donna Murphy's least favorite player because he's the one who took out Tom Brady.
Yes, they
call him the Patriot Killer, Bernard Pollard. From back in the day. All right, let's take a time out here and come back and look at the Jags defense. From what Jeff Logman saw on the film, they're getting ready to take on the Tennessee Titans and going up against a team that, although they lost, gave up the biggest home comeback in National Football League history. The biggest home loss are after having a 25-point lead. Cleveland Browns completed the biggest road comeback. They still put up plenty of points on the board, and we'll see what kind of challenge they'll present to the Jacksonville Jaguar defense. That's coming up. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today rolling on in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Don't forget to stop by the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Got a pair of tickets on the line, including a pair of pregame passes to the 1010XL pregame party for the Cleveland game, week 7, coming up. We'll draw a winner next week, but it's courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. Go there and just post a picture in the thread that's pinned at the top, and the theme is Old School Jaguars. Whatever that means to you, post a picture in there. We'll take some of the best ones, we'll put them in the drawing, and we'll give away a pair of tickets again, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. If you have issues with your home's foundation, interior or exterior wall cracks, windows and doors sticking, foundation cracks, sloping floors, they could all be signs of much more serious problems. Check out the pros at Foundation Professionals of Florida. They'll give you the peace of mind that your home is safe. And if it's not, they'll tell you how they can get it done to repair and make sure that you are taking care of your most important investment, your house. Licensed and insured, call Foundation Professionals of Florida, 287-2690, or visit foundationprosfl.com. All right, Jeff, defensively, asked you when you walked in, give me the lowdown on Demetrius McCray. Seventh-round pick last year, obviously. Dwayne Grotz out, getting a chance to start. Might have been trending that way anyway. How did he play this week?
I thought he played really well, and I think that he has probably now earned more trust from the coaching staff than Dwayne Grotz, because Dwayne Grotz was a guy I'd mentioned a couple weeks ago who I thought had an opportunity or a chance of getting sat down
right
when they were struggling in coverage. And with Grotz having the concussion, being inactive last week, it was a great opportunity for Demetrius McCray. He took advantage of it, played very well. The breakup that he had in the end zone on Antonio Brown was a great job of recovering and showed his length. The completions that have happened over there, he's made the tackle after the case, or he has contested most of them. So, I think he's going to be the starter the rest of the way.
Rest of the season, at
yeah.
least, right?
Yeah.
Does he project to you, or just looking at him in what you've seen so far in film, is he a guy that could be a foundation piece for this organization?
I mean, he could. I don't know if he's ever going to be. I mean, he's not going to be a Richard Sherman type. I don't think he has those kind of movements.
But not everybody has to be that guy.
No, but I think he can be a very solid guy kind of going forward, but I still want to see Aaron Colvin, you know, in the years to come. But you know, the more quality corners you have, boy, does that make a big difference. And so if he can hold down that job and improve throughout the year, because he's still a very young player with a lot of upside because he's still developing physically, that would be great for this team. And Dwayne Grotz, I think it's great for him because he's now going probably, and I don't know this for sure, but my guess is that he's going to have to earn it back. And that earning probably won't occur until Demetrius McCray either struggles or in a situation where they put him on the field in a dime-type situation. Demetrius McCray is playing too good to take him out. Leave him in there.
What happened between the first 4 weeks and this past week? You're going up against a receiver who had been pretty much your most prolific guy for the first month of the season in Antonio Brown. Ben Roethlisberger's had many, you know, 350-type passing games. What happened that so dramatically improved the overall play of the secondary this week?
Awareness. You know, route awareness in zones. Played a little bit of man coverage. The man coverage was great. And that's typically, remember I was talking with the wide receivers about that learning curve and learning the system and learning the concepts. It's very similar with the defensive backfield. Remember, this defensive backfield is still very young. You know, Cyprian's only in his second year. Gratz is in his second year. McCray's in his second year. Alan Ball's a veteran guy. Josh Evans is still a young guy. So last year was a year in which they were learning, what am I supposed to do on this play, my responsibility? And you remember a couple of weeks ago when I said, if you took like a tic-tac-toe board and you put those nine guys in there and said, okay, you each have to cover an area, but if nobody's in your area, what do you do then? You know, you got to kind of get to the edge of your area and kind of lean to another area to cover somebody to not cover just green. And I think that that's what we're starting to see with this group, is that they're starting to learn to lean certain ways in coverages to where they're playing the coverage, they're playing their responsibility, but then playing the routes or the route concepts within that zone coverage, and big improvement last week.
The four sacks, you talked about three of them you thought were
coverage sacks. Yeah, two or three of them coverage sacks.
Ultimately, sacks are a great statistic, and we, you know, the typical person, myself, the typical listener out there is going to get caught up in that stat as an indication of the pass rush's effectiveness. If you got four sacks every week and you average that over 16 games, you're going to come close to leading the league in sacks most years. I don't think the Jags pass rush is.
Do you get that impression that they're that good?
No, I don't.
Okay.
So beyond those individual plays, and we'll talk about the play of Avery Jones here coming up in a minute. He had two of those. Are they getting enough consistent pressure? Because there's still those occasions. The one in particular, we saw Ben Roethlisberger pump it four times.
It was like a 10 Mississippi.
And Jeff, I'm telling you, as soon as almost as he's releasing the ball, he's got a grin on his face like, man, I've never had this much time to throw. So, you know, do they need to still work towards more of a balance point? They got the four sack, but are they getting anywhere near enough consistent pressure?
Well, I think it's good at times. You like to have it be a little bit more consistent. The reason I ask you, does it feel like it's that good? Because, you know, there are sacks that happen and then sacks that don't happen but have more of an impact on the play.
Right.
I still don't think that they're where they need to be at rushing the passer and consistently being able to put pressure on the quarterback. I mean, at times, Ben Roethlisberger mentioned the 10 Mississippi count. There was a couple of them that were probably five or six Mississippi
right.
counts, and you'd like to have them down. You know, so it's not where it needs to be, but it's good. It's much better than it was last year.
Well, right, because you compare that to last year, and everybody was playing five Mississippi football back
then.
Well,
you always want to be able to have, like, two Mississippi, you know, and then
sure.
the ball's got to be out, but, you know. That's in a perfect world.
Step in the right direction, though.
Absolutely.
Overall.
Absolutely. There were some really nice pass rushes, I mean, by individuals at times. You know, Avery Jones pushing the pocket, and we'll get into him more. But Ryan Davis had one move that he absolutely smoked Ramon Foster, however you pronounce his game. He crushed him. I mean, Foster was just sitting there looking at nothing because Ryan Davis was already past him. Brancher, I think, made tremendous progress. You remember the little fisticuffs that he got into in San Diego?
Yeah.
Because I've always said that he consistently gets his hands up high. Well, his hands got down this past game, and he got a little bit more power. And he's also starting to learn to, once you get past the quarterback, you have to be able to come back. And I think that's part of his learning process, and I think he's getting better at that. Clemens, I thought, had a little bit better performance. I still want to see more out of him. In this game against the Tennessee Titans, it's going to be a challenge now. They're pretty good up front.
Avery Jones, I asked you this as well before the show. Right place, right time. Good performance, good effort. How did he have the game that he had with a couple of sacks and forcing the fumble that led to the one turnover?
Well, I know the one sack came over a Pro Bowl center, Marquise Pouncey, and it was an excellent rush. The other one was kind of right place, right time, but being in the right place is part of your job.
Sure.
You know, so he's a powerful guy, and I remember last year when he was in training camp and I was watching him, and I'm sitting there going, he's just a guy. And I had some conversations with general manager Dave Caldwell, and I give him a lot of credit because I'm just looking at what I can see. They had obviously done a lot of research on Avery Jones going back to when before he had that significant ankle injury at Georgia, to where he was one heck of a football player. Last year, you could tell he was just kind of a plotter. This year, he has power, quick twitch, and really explosive finish with his game. And he's shown quickness at a level that I've never seen him have. You know, that's a good sign because he's able to spell Roy Miller. And that for that interior front against the Pittsburgh Steelers, I mean, first of all, they've got two very good backs, an excellent center, and the best performance probably was by Avery Jones and Roy Miller. I mean, Roy Miller had a tremendous game. I'm going to show a play on Film Room Friday where it was a toss play to the little running back, Dre Archer. Roy Miller beat the block of Pouncey, ran him down, and made the tackle. I mean, it was a tremendous play for a nose tackle. Great range.
Sinderick had that play, too.
In the backfield, knifed in, took the guy's legs out.
Right. And that if he doesn't make that play, could go for a while, mm-hmm. right?
I would have liked to have seen him have a little more success in the pass rush than he did, but he's been very, very good all year long.
You don't like to play the, if you took this play out, so-and-so would do this, but, you know, with Le'Veon Bell, he had one rush that went for 29 yards. The other 14 resulted in 53 yards. So I never got the feeling watching the game that he was dominating the game, but ultimately 15 carries for 82 yards is a pretty respectable clip. And if you're going to average 5 yards a carry, you're typically going to have a couple of long runs that bumps your average up. If you were Pittsburgh, the way the game was going and the job that the Jaguars secondary was doing, would you have gone to the running game a little bit more?
No, I think they did. I mean, why? I mean, you're playing a football team that the previous 4 weeks has struggled to cover anybody.
Right, but in this game, you've only scored 10 offensive points in this football game.
I really believe that they had a lot of respect for Blake Bortles. And you could kind of read between the lines with some of their comments that they were above and beyond just pregame talk.
Right.
You know, I really believe that they had, I don't want to say a fear, but a respect for Blake Bortles and his playmaking ability to extend the play that all of a sudden if he gets out.
They didn't want to be too conservative then.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And the week before, they were conservative against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it cost them a football game.
Linebacker core overall, what'd you see on film?
Okay. I mean, okay. Posluszny had, I think, a very, very good game. The rest of them just kind of okay. You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers played a ton of three wide receiver sets, so the predominant defense was the nickel package. I think Telvin Smith took a big step up. In the preseason, we were kind of going, wow, look at Telvin Smith.
Right.
Remember, he had the tip, led the interception.
Yep.
You know, he was making plays, getting downfield, leading on the takeaways. And in the first 4 weeks of the season, I don't remember an impactful play that he had. He started to show up this past game. And that's positive because they need him to be an impactful player because he's got great range, he's got great speed.
And when you say he started to show up, what does the showing up equate to?
In position to cover guys, and I think that was missing in the first four games. He got in better position in his coverage. He was more aware of routes. But also in the running game, he was physical. You know, for a 218, 220-pound linebacker, whatever he weighs now, that has never been his forte. But if he wasn't involved in most tackles, he was right there to help. And that's a good sign for Telvin Smith.
Is it a simple question of it's starting to slow down a little bit? I know it's only been five games now, but is, you know, when you've got that much athletic ability, do you think he's trying to think his way through it a little too much the first day?
Yeah,
is he getting to a point where he's able to just play a little bit more?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, when you're in the preseason as a linebacker, it's very difficult. And some of the teams that they play, particularly the Philadelphia Eagles, very stressful for linebackers. The San Diego Chargers can stress linebackers big time. You're so caught up in worrying about what you have to do, you never focus in on what the opponent is trying to do or any kind of keys that you may have. You know, when you line up as a linebacker, you're looking at formations, stances, down and distances, and you're trying to compute all of that to give you an idea of, okay, can I lean this way? And I guarantee you that Telvin Smith in the first 4 weeks wasn't leaning anywhere. He was standing straight up going, okay, what's going to happen? and you could kind of get the feel that he was starting to lean a little bit in this game. And that's the natural progression.
Storm Johnson, you think, is coming on, mm-hmm. okay? Possibly even start this week? Possible?
Possible, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Demetrius McCray, certainly, you think, is coming on, mm-hmm. right? Because you just said you think we'll see him maybe start the rest of the season going forward. Who else, other than those guys that you singled out, and Telvin Smith maybe, is there anybody else that we're missing that their play is dictating they need to get more reps, whether it's one of the defensive linemen, or what? Obviously, your offensive line is set now, barring injury going forward.
No, I don't think there's anybody else. I mean, I think that where they were at this past game is where they need to be, with the exception of Storm Johnson. I think they're right where they need to be. Here and some, Ryan Robinson just handed me this. This is pretty interesting stuff.
This just in.
Yeah, just in. Week 5 in the National Football League, this is number of rookie starters from last week's games and Monday night's games. There were 4 teams that had none. Denver, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and Detroit. Not one rookie starter in the lineup. There were, it looks like about 12 or so that had one rookie in the lineup. There's half a dozen that had two. There were 2 teams that had 3 rookie starters, and that was Chicago and New England. There were 2 that had 4. That's the Buffalo Bills and the Carolina Panthers. And at the top of the list was the Jaguars, with 7.
7.
7.
What do we hear offensively?
What's that number if you include second-year guys, too? I mean,
it would be dramatic.
Right.
And it could, and you know what? That number could change. I mean, if they came out in this week, okay, for example,
there.
If they come out this week on offense and are in 12 personnel, 12 personnel, you have 12 personnel, 11 personnel, running back, tight end. That's what the numbers that it gives you. So 21 is 2 running backs and 1 tight end. 11 is 1 running back, 1 tight end. If they come out in 12, which is 1 running back and 2 tight ends, you could have Nick Jacobs on the field as a starter as a rookie. And if Storm Johnson is in the backfield, that's another rookie added onto that list.
Storm, Jacobs, Hearns, Robinson, Bowanko, Linder,
Bortles.
Bortles, that's 7 on offense alone. And that no other team had more than 4 on their 22-man starting
pretty amazing
roster. It's I don't know if it's unprecedented, but it's certainly.
And I've been waiting to see if anybody can get that information, and I need to call up one of the statistical companies and find out some numbers on that.
Right, at least like in the Super Bowl era.
I'm thinking back to, okay, what would be the logical teams that have had rookie starters? You know, you think back to the expansion teams, right?
Club,
Houston's,
sure.
Cleveland, Jaguars, Carolina Panthers. I don't think anybody has had that number. We didn't have that number.
What is that an indication? Obviously, it's an indication they're trying to rebuild the team, but are they having success identifying good rookies, or does the roster still in need of so much overhaul that this many guys can come in and play immediately
and be your best option? I think with this team, it's twofold. One, they've committed to youth. They've committed to the road ahead, not to now. And I get it. You know, they're trying to build this team for the decade and more and beyond. And they're not saying that, okay, this year is a wasted year, but they're saying in order for us to be good in year 3, in year 4, we need to commit to these guys. But the reality is that on this roster, being so young, the rookies that are playing right now, they're the best players on the roster. You know, so.
It's not playing rookies for rookies.
No, they're not playing them just because, well, we gotta start giving these guys reps so they can be better in year 3. They're the best players that they got.
What's your opinion on the timetable for Shad Khan? Right, he's a guy who came in, and clearly you don't want to get a reputation of having a quick trigger finger. He has that with Fulham. All right,
I think
he's run through 4 different managers, I think, so far.
It might be more.
Oh, that club might be 4 or 5 different guys. Mike Mularkey came in; he got a year.
Yeah,
and so here's Gus Bradley now, who has won 4 games out of 21. All right, and like you said, we understand some of the reasons why that is, but the facts are the facts. Shad Khan wants to win. I get all that stuff. Is there an expectation? Is there a number that will next year will carry in terms of wins? Will it be quality of play? And what is your best guess on what he's thinking right now?
Oh, that's a great question. But I don't. I think there's only one person that knows the answer to that, and that's Shot
Stash.
Gone, you know, so. But I do know that you can just see from the way that they have been doing things with the roster that they're looking at year 3 and 4 and 5. And now they've got a rookie quarterback, a franchise guy. You know, next year, the expectation goes up. The year after that, the expectation reaches another level.
When do you think, is it as soon as next year? Or is it too soon to know that based on how the rest of this year plays out when they really start to get more aggressive in free agency and supplementing what they hope is a young core?
Well, here's the reality. They have to be aggressive in free agency. You know, there's the rule that you have to spend a minimum amount of money.
But you don't have to spend – you have to spend it in cash, though, right? And if you sign a guy – like if you sign one guy – and he gets a $10 million signing bonus, that $10 million counts towards fulfilling that goal. Like, if the salary cap's $125 million, you've got to spend whatever the number is, 99% of that as a league average in cash.
Yep, but ignore the formula. The reality is they have to spend money. It's going to be an exciting free agency period for this football team.
So you think starting next year they've got to really start putting the pedal to the metal?
They have to. I mean, they literally have to. They have to spend money. And they want to. But they wanted to build the base and then sprinkle in. So this year coming up, they're going to be spending some money in free agency. And I'm not talking about week 3, week 4, May, and free agency. I'm talking minutes after free agency opens. I expect this team to be rocking and rolling.
Right, which now, you know, you get that week period. Is it a week or several days where you get the...
I think it's a three-day period where you can talk
the tampering agents. Period, yeah. Which we know went on anyway.
Yeah,
but
which makes the tampering happen before the tampering period
which
is allowed.
Which may be the case, but at least now you have a little bit more cover when you sign the guy at 12:01 a.m.
Yeah. Tampering starts in February. What are you talking
about?
Right,
I got you.
Well, it starts before then.
By the way, as far as Shot Gone goes, I don't know if the story's true or not. But I don't know if you heard the anecdote that Tony and I heard yesterday that Shad was coming down in an elevator. Somebody had a Steeler uniform on and asked to take a picture with him. He said, go ask Art Rooney. I hope that's true. I don't know if it's true, but I really hope that story is true.
I believe it.
I hope it is. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like something he would do.
Mm-hmm.
But that endears him, I think, to the fan base that much more. And I'll give him credit for that one, whether it's true or not. Good job, Shad. All right, we'll take a time out here. We'll come back. Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you today, which player has been the most pleasant surprise on this Jaguar roster to date? We'll ask Jeff Lagerman how he feels about that and get a lot of your responses aired as well. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the home stretch, got XL Primetime, top of the hour. They'll get you caught up on all the latest from around the entire sports world, focusing in on the Jags and the National Football League. Jaguars today rolling on here. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you daily by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking you today which Jaguar player has been the most pleasant surprise based on his performance so far through 5 games this season. Tony, what kind of feedback we get on that?
Here's what we got from Paul. We got Polanco. When you get a potential long-term starter with a 6th-round pick, that's a win. Hashtag UVA stinks, though. Sorry, Jeff.
Oh,
with that.
Oh,
from Paul, we got definitely Hearnsey, even though he had a few drops this week. From Christoph, we got Blake Bortles. Didn't realize he would be that damn good. From Peter, we got most pleasant, my new ticket location. Everyone stands up and cheers. Well, that one time anyway. Hashtag winning 3 in a row. From Stevie, we got it's way too early to say Storm, but I was surprised by how well he did. Bowanko would be my other choice. From Rookie DeVille, we got I'd say Bowanko to get a possible long-term center in the 6th round is a win. Hashtag Virginia kid. Hashtag thanks for the pick. And from Fun, we got Allen Robinson. Didn't think he would be this productive with minimal preseason experience. From Josh, we got Linder or Bowanko. Hearns, if he worked on drops, hashtag hope at the O-line. From Ocho, we got Luke Bowanko. He's done a solid job at the center spot. From Cam, Brandon Linder for being an unheralded third-round pick to start and not get ripped for bad play is great. From Eric, I've liked seeing Luke Bowanco develop into a starting center. Sixth round of starter as a rookie. Hashtag good stuff from Matt. Brandon Linder for sure. Best O-lineman, and he's a rookie. Most consistent player on offense, too. And from John, Allen Hurns, undrafted free agent rookie, and has stole the show at least before the B2 bomber started. Hashtag stuck in Pennsylvania.
For you, Jeff, you probably have a different perspective than a lot of people because you've been talking up Linder all throughout the preseason. So once the season began, you probably expected good things out of him as an example. But how would you answer that question? Who, since the season began, who has surprised you the most in a positive way?
Well, I mean, even though I expected Linder to play very well in the regular season, you still would expect certain moments that he would look like he were overmatched or that he were lost. But it shocked me that he has not had a play like that. I mean, this guy's playing like a veteran. He's playing at a very high level. He's going to make every NFL all-rookie team that there is. I mean, look, I don't care if he's a third-round pick. You get a third-round pick to play at a high level on offensive line, tremendous job. I mean, tremendous job. And I can't say enough good things about his performance, that level he's been playing at.
Consistently been the best.
He's the best offensive lineman. You know, hands down. Bowanco, absolutely, because for the very reason a lot of people had mentioned there, that he's a sixth-round pick. But, you know, you're not just satisfied because he was a sixth-round pick. You know, I'm thinking that this guy has long-term starting caliber ability. Got great feet, great ability to get to the second level. He's got great hip strength. When he gets stronger upper body, which will happen when a player gets at this level, and now he can dedicate his time basically full time to training for his craft, which is football and strength, he's going to be even that much better. You know, in fact, I was asked the question, I think it was yesterday, about how does he compare to Schwenke, which Schwenke is the starting center in Tennessee, started last year as a rookie. They're very different in that Bowanco has an ability to snap shotgun, snap whatever, and then pull. There's not many guys that you can find that can do that and still have the snaps be accurate, have the speed to get out front. But you go back to that screenplay to Toby Gerhart, Bowanco was the one that was out in front of Toby Gerhart leading away. That's a really nice acquisition. So, I mean, those two, absolutely. And are there any other gems that I've found? You know, I think most people have got him.
Hearns surprise you?
Because, you know, when I watched his college tape, I just said, you know, there's a good, solid wide receiver. Probably be a guy that you put on the practice squad that, you know, if you have injuries, you'd elevate him because he's probably pretty good in everything, but he doesn't wow you. And while I watch him play, you still don't have any wow moments with Allen Hurns, but you got good, solid, dependable play and a little bit of savviness probably that makes him play at a better level than most.
Go back to the offensive line for a second. I saw Alfie Crow, Big Cat Country, tweeting out in the last 24 hours or so. There have been a couple of mock drafts out already that suggested with the Jags, if the season ended today, they'd pick in the top three, that they might look at Cedric Abui, I believe is how you pronounce his name, the tackle from Texas A&M, the offensive tackle. And I think his opinion was, you know, are you really going to do that, you know, 2 years after drafting, Jokel to be your cornerstone? Do you think this is a group, including Austin Pastor at right tackle, is this a group that you could see playing together for a few years?
Well, I think it absolutely is a group. But I think it goes beyond just the starters. Tyler Shatley is a guard they got from Clemson who, as the preseason was coming to a close, he performed outstanding. The game that he had against the Atlanta Falcons made you go, okay, we might have a starter here. I hope that at some point, though, that he also learns to snap to give them that sixth guy, seventh guy on game day. But I don't know if he's ready for that. I mean, Shatley was a defensive lineman, I think, for some period of time before he moved to offensive line at Clemson. But I'm excited about him. I'm excited about him because also now you got six. I'm excited about the way Sam Young played in two games. But I'm just as excited about Josh Wells because Josh Wells, I think at some point Josh Wells, probably not this year, but maybe next year, and at times this year, he's going to be that swing guy. Very athletic, can play right tackle, can play left tackle. and I don't think you'd freak out if he were in the lineup. So the offensive line, I can tell you, they will not be drafting an offensive lineman. Write it down. They're not going to draft an offensive lineman next year in the top four round, period.
People are listening, right? I'm sure there are some fans that are listening saying, and why can't they run the damn ball? All right, if all these guys, if you're so high on all these guys, how do you respond to that?
Well, I'd like to see one of the other running backs behind this group. You know, you put the guy in Dallas that's having one heck of a year.
Right. He's running behind a line with three first rounders.
You put Le'Veon Bell behind the Jaguars' offensive line. I think things look very different.
So they're not getting enough help from the guys carrying the ball.
Well, and I want to say this too also. In the first couple games of the season, you could have put DeMarco Murray and Le'Veon Bell behind that offensive line. No. I think right now, if you put one of those backs behind this offensive line, because I think they've progressed very nicely, I think it would look very different.
How do you think they overall, not just offensive line here, but the matchup, quick capsule on Tennessee, offense, defense, special teams?
I think they match up very well. Ray Horton is their defensive coordinator in Tennessee. He comes from the Dick LeBeau school of coaching. I think he played under Dick LeBeau for 6 years. He coached under Dick LeBeau for 12 years. So you got tremendous carryover from the Pittsburgh Steelers game to the Tennessee Titans game. But you can tell that Jarrell Casey and some of these other players along that front seven are still trying to learn the 3-4. You know, it was a 4-3. Now it's a 3-4. Now they've got some 4-3 principles, but you can still tell that they're not quite comfortable at what they're doing. And most importantly, Jarrell Casey is not real comfortable playing the way that he is now compared to where he was playing at last year. So I think it's a great matchup for the Jaguars. And I don't think that Ray Horton's defense is as complicated as Dick LeBeau's as far as some of the intricacies or the extent that he blitzes. So I think that this is a very good matchup.
You think his team's ready for a breakthrough? I mean, are they getting...
I do.
They're getting close?
I think they win in Tennessee. I think they win in Tennessee.
Now, that's what they did last year.
And I have not predicted a win yet this year. I think they win in Tennessee.
All right, there you go. Jeff Logman, that's as definitive as it gets right there. Follow Logs on Twitter, at Logs56, L-O-G-S-5-6 on Twitter. And not only get all the latest on what the film shows, but maybe a couple of fishing hot spots as well out there. And you are a hashtag heavy guy, by the way. I've discovered.
Is that a good thing or bad?
Well,
thing?
I don't know. I just think it's neither. It's a kind of just an observation. My man will throw a hashtag in front of just about any word in his tweet, Tony.
Why not?
You never know when somebody's
I call
gonna,
it the pound.
The pound sign. That works too. Pound Jaguars then. Jeff Logman every Tuesday. Just pounding the film room knowledge here with you on Jaguars Today. Jeff, appreciate it, man. Have a good trip up to Tennessee.
Thank you.
Talk to you coming up this weekend. Where are we going to catch you the rest of the week?
Let's see. We got the Gus Bradley Show Thursday night right here on these airwaves.
Yep.
At 6 o'clock, and then 7 o'clock, Baselli, Shadwick. I like to call him J.P. Shadwick. He joins us here in studio for 7 to 8 hour. Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com. I know that they're going to be posting what we talked about at the very beginning of our show here today about the Troy Polamalu incident and also the completion of Antonio Brown, so that will be up on Jaguars.com. We've got On the Road with the Jaguars on Jaguars.com that will be up on Saturday. And then on Sunday morning, we got the pregame show with me and Sam Kavaris, and then pregame radio and game day.
There you go. He's all over the place. I love the fact that you just called it our show. He's owning it every Tuesday.
I like to say, you know,
I appreciate that.
I'm not like Lauren Brooks and me.
Right, exactly. And by the way, check out Helmets and Heels tonight. I'm sure they'll have a feature with Josh Scobie coming up. Very nicely played, Logs. We'll see you next Tuesday right here in studio on Jaguars Today. For Jeff Logman, for Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks, thanks to Agent Gibbs filling in today, and for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll say hello to the boys from XL Primetime next. Right here, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.